Well, thanks for coming. I know it's right after lunch, so I'll try to keep you awake as best I can. I'm going to talk a little bit about the state of the applications that you use that use TLS to access the internet for secure communications. The long story short of that is that they're vulnerable. They're vulnerable for a variety of reasons. Three off the top of my head is, one is that they don't always necessarily validate certificates properly, leaving themselves open to man-in-the-middle attacks. Some do not use up-to-date cipher suites and use weak ones that are known to be broken. And then other times you'll see people actually implement TLS using a modern library, but have it being using like TLS 1.1 or even versions of SSL that are all deprecated now. And so they're vulnerable in a lot of ways. And I'm not just talking about applications that are written in someone's basement or from a no-name company. I'm also talking about applications that have been written by PayPal and Amazon and Chase Bank. And all of these companies in the past have written things for the general public that have very, very big TLS problems and leave themselves open to man-in-the-middle attacks and other issues. And if we look at the research about this area, and there's a lot of it, there's a lot of different applications out there that have been found to be vulnerable. There's lots of studies and measurement studies that have been found that finding hundreds of applications both on the mobile and desktop spaces that have issues in their using of TLS. And so we have to take a step back and ask ourselves why. Why is it so difficult, especially in 2018, so many years after TLS has been invented and SSL before that, why is it so hard for developers to make an application that just connects to the internet securely? It's not entirely just because there's algorithms out there that become outdated over time. And as one researcher put it, it's actually the terrible design of the APIs themselves that cause a lot of these mistakes that developers make and choosing cipher suites or not doing certificate validation properly and things like that. And it's really not their fault in that sense. It's not that developers are idiots. Developers have to focus on a lot of different things, and security is only one of them, and it might not even be their priority. And most developers aren't security experts, and we can't expect them to be, and especially in the day and age that we live. To give you an idea of just how hard it can be on a developer, just the libSSL portion of OpenSSL, so all of the portion, just the piece that deals with TLS, exports 504 different symbols, so functions and macros, to developers to use. And that's just a ton. I don't know how many of you have used OpenSSL in the past, but it can be a little cumbersome and a little overwhelming at first, just to do something as simple as just create a simple TCP or TLS connection and then download somebody's homepage. So as an example of that exact same thing, we created the smallest program we could that just used OpenSSL with libSSL and connected to a remote host of our choosing, downloaded just a few bytes from its homepage over TLS, and then made sure that we did that in a secure way. So all the different proper checks for certificate validation and host name checks and validity checks like that. We targeted the older OpenSSL API, 1.0.1 for this, and we had borrowed the code that curl actually uses to do the validation portion. And in total, it was 317 lines of code just to go download a few bytes securely from the internet. And that's just unacceptable to us. And so in embarking on this research, we asked ourselves the question, can we do better? Can we do better than 317 lines of code just to access a few bytes on the internet? And more specifically, we were interested in using the POSIX socket API as a vehicle for this. The reason that that's important to us is because the POSIX socket API is a network API that's very well known, very well established. It's supported by every major operating system out there. And most network developers already know it very well. And so if we can leverage this API and just extend it slightly to support TLS, that would be the ideal. As an example of how a developer currently works with the socket, the POSIX socket API, they only need to perform this one call here to the function called socket, and it's the third parameter, this last one, where they can specify what protocol they'd like to use. Now, a developer doesn't need to know all of the the internals of TCP to do this. They just request TCP, and then any operation they perform on that socket afterward just uses TCP behind the scenes and does all the segmentation and out-of-order processing for them. And we'd like to do the same thing, but for TLS. So we've implemented a service that just extends the existing POSIX socket API without changing any function signatures and instead just adding different values for existing parameters. And so one of these parameters is here and shown in red, and that's just allowing developers to specify the TLS protocol when they create a socket and then use that socket afterward to perform TLS operations without having to know anything about TLS. We call this effort the Secure Socket API, or the SSA for short. And at a high level, if you call the connect function, for instance, on a TLS socket, it will perform a TLS handshake. If you call send, it will encrypt and then send that data. If you call receive, it'll decrypt and then give your application that data. And if you call close, it'll just terminate the TLS connection in a nice way. In a more pictorial type of representation, we have this is what we've done. So here on the left, we have the typical situation these days where we have some network application interfacing with some security library, new TLS or OpenSSL or some other one. And then the application and that library, and sometimes they trade off on this role, but together they're accessing the existing POSIX socket API to do all their network functionality, and they're crossing a system call barrier to do so. And then behind the scenes, it's usually the kernel that is implementing the actual protocols for the operations that are being requested. We want to flip this, and we have flipped this, so that the network application doesn't link with any security library at all. It just uses the socket API as it would normally, and then that API interacts with the kernel, and then within the kernel you have TLS functionality as if it were a native thing. In our implementation of this, we didn't put everything in the kernel, one, because that's a large undertaking, and we wanted the rest of the community to take part in that as we move in that direction. So right now what we have is a system where we have a small lightweight kernel module that just kind of exports an API to applications, and then applications can use that API to request TLS services, a TLS socket can be created, and then the operating system actually offloads all of the different encryption and decryption tasks and certificate validation tasks and TLS itself to a local user space encryption daemon, and we actually run a few of those for load balancing purposes on a machine. And then, in turn, when that daemon actually needs to send information to the internet or receive it from the internet, it'll use the existing implementations in the kernel. So if it's using TLS, it can use TCP behind the scenes, and if it's using DTLS, it would use UDP. One thing I want to point out is that there's a little administrator configuration portion there of our encryption daemon. I'll get to that in a little bit. But doing this kind of architecture allowed us to effectively reduce the 504 exported symbols that I talked about before to just 14, because that's how many function calls are in the POSIX socket API, which is of course a huge win. And if you recall the example I had in the beginning with the 317 lines of code to just download a few bytes of somebody's homepage, well, now we've reduced that to 16. And as a side note, if we were to do this without using TLS and just using a TCP socket, it was actually 25 lines of code. And the reason we get a little bit more reduction from 25 to 16 is because we've added a new address type, which is a host name type, allowing the system to do a DNS lookup for the user rather than having them do the DNS lookup and then connect that IP address that resolved from it. Before we embarked on this little journey of ours, we did a little bit of recon. We wanted to make sure that we had a general idea of how TLS was already being used in the practice, and we also wanted to take a look at all of the different mistakes developers were making to help guide our decision process as we were creating this API. So to do that, we actually analyzed the top 410 Ubuntu packages on Ubuntu 16.04 that used OpenSSL for TLS connectivity. And these were both server and client applications. We then took all of the different symbols that were exported by OpenSSL, broke them down by categories, and looked to see for each category how all these different applications were using and in some cases abusing that API. The results of that particular effort are too much to go into for this talk, but if you'd like to check out our website or our paper, that has a lot more details on that. But these efforts did help us understand the kinds of options that we needed to export to developers, because not every TLS connection is going to be the same, and there are some variations in the protocol itself that export options to developers that they might need. And so we actually have a very nice vehicle for this in the existing networking API using the setSockOpt and getSockOpt options. So under TLS, you can create a TLS socket and then use one of these functions to set various parameters that you need for that connection. As an example of that, we have two here shown on the screen. This is an example where a server might want to specify its certificate chain, where it's located, and then also its key to use. So you would do that with a set socket operation. We've actually exported quite a few different options for developers based off the recon that we did on the apps and seeing what kinds of options developers actually needed to perform TLS connections. And you can look at all of the different definitions for these in our paper. I mentioned administrator options a little bit earlier in the talk. This was one of the fundamental goals of our project. It wasn't just that applications were vulnerable because they were being, SSL libraries and things were being, misused by developers. There was also some issues with the fact that an application that's fine and secure today might not be secure tomorrow, because maybe somebody finds an exploit in a particular cipher suite. And right now, developers or administrators are kind of powerless to deal with that. If they have an application that they really want to use that is using an outdated version of TLS, there's not much they can do. And so we'd like to provide them with an opportunity to maintain their own standards for security. And, frankly, the administrators of the system have a better idea of that than anybody else. And I don't mean just administrators and power users. For the lay users that we have out there, we expect that these options can be exported to operating system vendors who might be interested in pushing updates. As let's say TLS 1.2 becomes deprecated tomorrow, and if they want to upgrade everyone to TLS 1.3, well, we can do that using this system, providing these administrator options to them. So right now, as it stands, administrators have a few options that they can use to control the behavior of all SSA TLS. Connections from their machines. They can specify what the minimum and maximum versions of TLS that they like to use. They can specify the cipher suites they'd like to pick and in order of preference, and also get rid of some if they want to ban some altogether. And in this way, you can maybe see an application being able to become FIPS compliant from a case where it wasn't beforehand. And they can settle this globally for all applications on their machines. So they can also set it on a per application basis if they want to tailor individual applications to specific situations. Another thing that needs treatment here is certificate validation, since that's such a complicated task. Administrators actually have two different options when it comes to validating certificates under the SSA. They can do standard validation, which just basically employs the default OpenSSL checks as well as hostname checks and a few other things. Or they can specify TrustBase, and TrustBase is a work that we presented last year at USENIX, and it's essentially just an operating system service that performs a certificate validation on behalf of all the applications on a machine, and administrators can customize exactly how this validation is performed. They can do normal standard certificate authority validation, everything like that, all the way up to more exotic methods like using a notary-based service like Perspectives or Convergence, and everything in between. And if they want to add like OCSP checking and stapling and CRL set checking, like that can be done. And you can run all of these independently or in tandem. It's all up to the administrator and what he wants. Or in some cases, the operating system vendors if they have an interest in doing that. In evaluating the utility of the SSA, we went ahead and evaluated how long it took and how many lines of code it required to change applications that didn't use the SSA into applications that did. So first we took Wget and Lighty, which were an HTTPS client and an HTTPS server, respectively. And these are applications that already use TLS, and they use OpenSSL for their TLS functionality. And we brought in two developers who had never touched TLS, had never even seen OpenSSL, and obviously they had never seen the SSA either. And we had them modify these applications so that they would retain all of their TLS functionality and the configuration of control over all these things and use the SSA instead. And in both cases, it took these developers less than 5 hours, most of which was simply them learning the code bases of these large projects. And then the coolest thing, I think, is that they were able to remove thousands of lines of code and replace them with just under 20 lines of code, making it much more simple. In a separate set of tests, we took an in-house web server we had developed that had never been employing TLS in any way, and then Netcat, which also has never employed TLS. And we had different developers take these applications and upgrade them to use TLS using the SSA. And in both cases, it took about 5 lines of code and under 10 minutes, which we thought was really nice. In an effort to extend the support of the SSA to other languages, we wanted to make sure that we could easily extend language support so that all languages on a machine could have a centralized place where administrators could control TLS behavior. To do that, we actually got a lot of that for free. Being that we are a kernel module sitting behind the system call layer, any sort of network call is going to go straight to us, and every single application or language that uses the internet must eventually be using a network system call at some point. And so our position there allowed us to just easily support any sort of language that was trying to use the internet. As an example of this, we added SSA support to Go, Python, and PHP. Python and PHP were rather simple since the implementations we were using of those, their interpreters both used libc behind the scenes, so all we had to do was make them aware of the various constants, like the developer options I showed you before and the IP proto TLS flag for the socket call. Making them aware of those constants fixed everything, and they were able to create native PHP and Python applications that just used the SSA without any more modification than that. Go was slightly different because they actually make their own system call wrappers, so all we had to do for that was just make the corresponding TLS ones with less than 50 lines of code, and then Go applications could also use TLS using the dialer interface. In terms of performance versus OpenSSL, we wanted to make sure that we weren't adding any undue overhead, so what we did was we created a simple stress test application that went off and visited a remote host and then a local one. And then we created that same exact program and with the SSA, and then we just kind of ran them against each other to make sure that they weren't, that we didn't add any extra overhead. And we're happy to report that we don't. It's kind of hard to see because there's actually four lines there, but they're on top of each other. And in both the remote and local cases, we don't add any overhead. In fact, in the remote case, we're a little bit faster. We're not exactly sure why, but we suspect that just caching behaviors might account for some of that. But yeah, we ran everything from like 1 to 100 different concurrent processes and didn't see any major problems there. But that's kind of an ongoing benchmarking effort. We also wanted to broaden the coverage of the SSA because there's a lot of admins out there who perhaps want to be using an application that perhaps won't be ported to the SSA, or maybe it's going to take a while. And so we made a little tool that allowed applications that are written for OpenSSL convert their behavior to using SSA behind the scenes. So we made a little OpenSSL emulator that overrode all of the different functions that people are calling in OpenSSL to configure their TLS parameters and to access the network. So any function that called a file descriptor, or any function that touched a file descriptor or a socket descriptor, we overrode that so that it would be using our socket calls behind the scenes. And then we also did some OpenSSL emulation for error reporting and things like that. And using this tool, we were able to dynamically port NCAT, WGIT, Lighty, and ERSI all over to use the SSA, obey administrator preferences for TLS, despite the fact that they weren't written for that, and we didn't have to modify their code at all. So there's a lot of different outcomes from this work. They're kind of in two camps. One camp is just the API itself. The Secure Socket API could have many different implementations, but we've chosen one. And these general benefits are that we can now allow developers to create TLS connections very simply using an API they already know. And then two, we allow administrators to control all of the different TLS configuration settings for those applications that are using that SSA API. And then on the implementation side, as you saw, it's really, really easy for us to add language support. All of the different language modifications we made took less than a day. And in many cases, it was just like less than 10 lines of code because it was just adding constants, definitions, and things. We also provide natural privilege separation this way. So you can imagine right now an application that has some sort of bug, maybe a buffer overflow or something that leaves it vulnerable. Well, right now, if it's linking with OpenSSL, then things like your master secrets and your private key data is in the same address space as that application, and so it's easily exploited, or at least it can be. With the SSA, we actually get to leverage the fact that we're behind the system call boundary, and there's a really nice long amount of work that's gone into it, making sure that that's a very secure layer. And all the private key data is actually in a totally different address space. So if your application gets compromised, your key data is not necessarily at risk, or at least not as easily at risk. We also support various different alternative implementations if desired. Our kernel module doesn't necessarily dictate how the encryption and TLS configuration is performed. We just export an API and then use user space daemons. And so if someone wants to create an alternative implementation, that's totally up to them. In fact, there's lots of different options there, like a total user space implementation too, which would have different benefits. But in conclusion, the Secure Socket API is a nice little API that enables developers to secure their connections using TLS, using a known API that every network developer already understands, and in ways that you as a user or administrator can control. Thank you.
Hey, very interesting idea there. Have you considered the possibility of extending the kernel-side support to support general redirection of new user space implementation of protocols, kind of like Fuse?
I've considered that briefly. I think that that's something that I would definitely be interested in going, but we haven't done anything like that.
Okay, and I'm also wondering a little bit if there's any additional risk by combining multiple processes TLS sessions into one of Spectre gadgets and other such side channel attacks leaking information across that boundary?
Probably. I haven't looked too much into that. We're still working on making sure that there are less issues there. Like, obviously, having one daemon that's doing all of your TLS connections has some issues with the centralization aspect. We do have options currently to just isolate those. So you can have one daemon per application, so there's a little bit more isolation there. But yeah, there are some additional security analyses to take place.
Thank you.
You already started touching on the question that I was about to ask. Do you foresee any challenges that come with the developers using your API and intentionally or not reusing the keys for multiple applications and multiple scenarios?
So like session keys
keys and
things?
Yeah, private keys and certificates, yeah.
Well, we do allow them to specify what keys they're using, but the administrator can override that if he'd like. Every time there's a conflict between a developer's wishes and an administrator's, we change that. So if system administrators and operating system vendors were on top of that, we could probably avoid that a bit more. But I don't have any protections currently in there that'll just say, like, no, you've used this private key for too long. That's an interesting idea, though. We could perhaps implement something like that.
And a quick second question, if I may. I didn't really see the list very carefully. Didn't look at the list very carefully, but one of the things that is often handy is to use select and pull in the more complicated servers,
yes,
and not just accept. Do you have any? Well, how does your code work with that?
Yeah, so we actually implement the user space daemon almost like a proxy internally, and so we actually get the epull and select and functionality for free. And we've tested that. We actually have a test file where it's a web server that's event-driven using epull, and it works just great with the SSA.
You showed that your API is very easy to use and very efficient. Did you also look whether people use your API in a secure way? You're citing the paper of Sasha Fahl where they analyzed the Android apps and found that people use it in the wrong way very, very often. Did you analyze this? So is your API secure by default? Something like this,
yeah,
you know?
For example,
certificate validation, do you have to explicitly switch it off, and when you don't use the parameter, it's on? Something like this?
Yeah, so all that is security, like certificate validation is on by default, and then the administrator can actually configure that how they'd like. Applications are free to say, like, they can pen certificates if they'd like, but there's no way for them to say, like, oh, no, I don't want to do any validation at all. That's up to the administrator to allow or not. Does that answer all your question?
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
So great research.
Thanks.
Some of us would like to start using it as soon as possible. Have you started talking to POSIX about actually implementing this, getting this into the POSIX standard?
I have not, and I'd love to do that. I don't know who to get in contact with, but I'll be looking into that soon. We do have here, our code is open source and free to everybody. I would like to get it integrated and standardized soon. We're still working things out. It is just like a research prototype right now, but if there's opportunity to talk to people about that, I'm all ears.
Hi, I'm channeling Twitter. The question is, have you seen the POSIX-style APIs in the Libre SSL and the S2N library from Amazon, and what are your thoughts in terms of comparisons?
Oh, there's a lot there. I mean, I think those are both steps in the right direction in terms of API simplification. I think they help developers avoid a lot of pitfalls. I do like the fact that in this case, we're fully POSIX compliant and that we didn't change any signatures at all, and I think that the administrator control part of it is something that's lacking in those other two.
I haven't looked into the code yet, but did you use existing TLS implementations, or do you implemented it on your own? And if yes, so what would be the lessons learned, maybe? What should we do you have anything like that?
Or? Yeah, I actually implemented it with a magnetized needle on a hard drive by myself. No, I'm just kidding. No, we actually use OpenSSL behind the scenes.
So you ported OpenSSL as a kernel module, or?
Yeah, so we didn't implement OpenSSL in the kernel, right? Or that would have taken some time. So right now the user space encryption daemon is using it's actually using libevent as well as OpenSSL behind the scenes to do all of its operations.
Okay. Yeah, thanks.
So we have quite a time for only one quick question.
Yeah, it's a quick one. Cool work. Have you thought about using a similar approach for Intel SGX enclaves?
I have. We haven't done anything with that, but I think there's options there too. So, yeah, we should talk later, actually.